I had instead a jar of sufficiently decent beer and an evening of music, with the promise of a good singer and songs I'd never heard before. I was nearer to my goal than I'd ever dared hope to be, and I could, for just this one night, relax. The singer was excellent, though I didn't understand any of the words she sang. She came on late, and by then the place was crowded and noisy, though the audience occasionally fell silent over their beer, listening to the music, and the knocking between pieces grew loud and boisterous. I ordered enough beer to justify my continued presence, but didn't drink most of it. I'm not human, but my body is, and too much would have dulled my reactions unacceptably. I stayed quite late, and then walked back to our lodgings along the darkened street. Here and there a pair or threesome walking, conversing, ignoring me. In the tiny room I found Savardin asleep, motionless, breathing calm, face and limbs slack. Something indefinably still about her suggested that this was the first I'd seen her in real, restful sleep. For the briefest instant, I found myself wondering if she'd taken Kef. But I knew she had no money, didn't know anyone here, and didn't speak any of the languages I had heard so far. I lay down beside her and slept. I woke 6 hours later, and incredibly, Savardin still lay beside me, still asleep. I didn't think she had waked while I slept. She might as well get as much rest as she could. I was, after all, in no hurry. I rose and went out. Further toward the medical center, the street became noisy and crowded. I bought a bowl of hot, milky porridge from a vendor along the side of the walkway, and continued along where the road curved around the hospital and off toward the center of the town. Buses stopped, let passengers off, picked others up, continued on. In the stream of people, I saw someone I recognized, the girl from Striegen's and her mother. They saw me. The girl's eyes widened, and she frowned slightly. Her mother's expression didn't change, but they both swerved to approach me. They had, it seemed, been watching for me. "Breck," said the girl, when they had stopped in front of me, subdued. Uncharacteristically, it seemed. "Is your uncle all right?" I asked.
"Yes, uncle is fine."
But clearly something troubled her.
"Your friend," said her mother, impassive as always, and stopped.
"Yes?"
"Our flyer is parked near yours," the girl said, clearly dreading the communication of bad news. "We saw it when we got back from supper last night."
"Tell me." I didn't enjoy suspense. Her mother actually frowned.
"It's not there now."
I said nothing, waiting for the rest.
"You must have disabled it," she continued. "Your friend took money, and the people who paid him towed the flyer away."
The lot staff must not have questioned it. They had seen Savardin with me. "She doesn't speak any languages," I protested.
"They made lots of motions," explained the girl, gesturing widely. "Lots of pointing and speaking very slow."
I had badly underestimated Savardin. Of course, she had survived, going from place to place with no language but Rodchai and likely no money, but still had managed to nearly overdose on Kef. More than once, likely. She could manage herself, even if she managed badly. She was entirely capable of getting what she wanted without help. And she had wanted Kef, and she had obtained it. At my expense, but that was of no importance to her.
"We knew it couldn't be right," said the girl, "because you said you were only stopping the night on the way to space. But no one would have listened to us. We're just both herders."
And no doubt the sort of person who would buy a flyer with no documentation, no proof of ownership, a flyer, moreover, that had obviously been deliberately disabled to prevent its being moved by anyone but the owner,
It might very well be a good idea to avoid confronting such a person.
I wouldn't presume to say, said the girl's mother, oblique condemnation, what sort of friend your friend is.
Not my friend. Never my friend, now or at any other time.
Thank you for telling me.
I walked to the lot, and the flyer was indeed gone. When I returned to the room, I found Savardin still sleeping, or at any rate still unconscious. I wondered just how much Kef, the flyer, had bought her. I only wondered long enough to retrieve my pack from the lodging's safe, pay for the night. After this, Savardin would have to fend for herself, which apparently posed very little problem for her, and went looking for transport out of town. There was a bus, but the first had left 15 minutes before I asked after it, and the next wouldn't leave for 3 hours. A train ran alongside the river, northward once a day, and like the bus, it had already left. I didn't want to wait. I wanted to be gone from here. More specifically, I didn't want to chance seeing Savardin again, even briefly. The temperature here was mostly above freezing, and I was entirely capable of walking long distances. The next town worth the name was, according to maps I'd seen, only a day away. If I cut across the glass bridge and then straight across the countryside instead of following the road which curved to avoid the river and the bridge's wide chasm. The bridge was several kilometers out of town. The walk would do me good. I hadn't had enough exercise lately. The bridge itself might be mildly interesting. I set off toward it. When I had walked a little over half a kilometer, past the lodgings and food shops that surrounded the medical center, into what looked like a residential neighborhood, smaller buildings, groceries, clothes shops, complexes of low square houses joined by covered passageways, Savardin came up behind me.
Brack, she gasped out of breath. Where are you going?
I didn't answer, only walked faster.
Brack, damn it!
I stopped, but didn't turn around. Considered speaking. Nothing I thought of saying was remotely temperate, nor would anything I said do any sort of good. Savardin caught up with me.
Why didn't you wake me up? She asked.
Answers occurred to me. I refrained from speaking any of them aloud, and instead began walking again. I didn't look back. I didn't care if she followed me or not. Hoped, in fact, she wouldn't. I could certainly have no continued sense of responsibility, no fears that without me she would be helpless. She could take care of herself.
Breck, damn it,
Savardin called again, and then swore, and I heard her footsteps behind me and her labored breath again as she caught up. This time I didn't stop, but quickened my pace slightly. After another 5 kilometers, during which she had intermittently fallen behind and then raced, gasping to catch up, she said,
Otters, tits, you hold a grudge, don't you?
Still, I said nothing and didn't stop. Another hour passed, the town well behind us, and the bridge came in sight. Flat black, arcing across the drop, spikes and curls of glass below, brilliant red, intense yellow, ultramarine, and jagged stubs of others. The chasm walls were striated, black, green, gray, and blue, frosted here and there with ice. Below, the bottom of the chasm was lost in cloud. A sign in 5 languages proclaimed it to be a protected monument, access permitted only to a certain class of license holders. What license, to what purpose, was mysterious to me, as I didn't recognize all the words on the sign. A low barrier blocked the entrance, nothing I couldn't easily step over, and there was no one here but me and Savardin. The bridge itself was 5 meters wide, like all the others, and while the wind blew strong, it wasn't strong enough to endanger me. I strode forward and stepped over the barrier and out onto the bridge.
Had heights troubled me, I might have found it dizzying. Fortunately, they didn't, and my only discomfort was the feeling of open spaces behind and under me that I couldn't see unless I turned my attention away from other places. My boots thunked on the black glass, and the whole structure swayed slightly and shuddered in the wind. A new pattern of vibrations told me Savardin had followed me. What happened next was largely my own fault. We were halfway across when Savardin spoke.
All right, I get it, you're angry.
I stopped but didn't turn. How much did you get? I asked finally, only one of the things I had considered saying.
What?
Though I hadn't turned, I could see the motion as she leaned over, hands on her knees, could hear her still breathing hard, straining to be heard against the wind.
How much, Kef? I only wanted a little, she said, not quite answering my question. Enough to take the edge off. I need it. And it's not like you paid for that flyer to begin with.
For an instant, I thought she had remembered how I had acquired the flyer, unlikely as that seemed. But she continued.
You've got enough in that pack to buy 10 flyers, and none of it's yours. It belongs to the Lord of the Roch, doesn't it? Making me walk like this is just you being pissy.
I stood, still facing forward, my coat flattened against me in the wind. Stood trying to understand what her words meant, about who or what she thought I was, why she thought I had troubled myself about her.
I know what you are, she said as I stood silent. No doubt you wish you could leave me behind, but you can't, can you? You've got orders to bring me back.
What am I? I asked, still without turning, loud against the wind.
Nobody, that's who.
Savardin's voice was scornful. She was standing upright now, just behind my left shoulder.
You tested into military, in the aptitudes, and like a million other nobodies these days, you think that makes you somebody. And you practiced the accent, and how to hold your utensils, and knelt your way to special missions, and now I'm your special mission. You've got to bring me home in one piece, even though you'd rather not, wouldn't you? You've got a problem with me. At a guess, your problem is that try all you like, whoever you kneel to, you'll never be what I was born to be, and people like you hate that.
I turned toward her. I'm certain my face was without expression, but when my eyes met hers, she flinched. No edge taken off, none at all, and took 3 quick reflexive steps backward over the edge of the bridge. I stepped to the edge, looked down. Savardin hung 6 meters below, hands clenched around a complicated swirl of red glass, her eyes wide, mouth open slightly. She looked up at me and said,
"You were going to hit me!"
The calculations came easily to me. All my clothes knotted would only reach 5.7 meters. The red glass was connected somewhere under the bridge. I couldn't see. No sign of anything she could climb. The colored glass wasn't as strong as the bridge itself. I guessed the red spiral would shatter under Savardin's weight sometime in the next 3 to 7 seconds. Though that was only a guess. Still, any help I might call would certainly arrive too late. Clouds still veiled the bottom reaches of the chasm. Those tubes were just a few centimeters narrower than my outstretched arms, and were themselves very deep.
Brack!
Savardin's voice was breathy and strained.
Can you do something?
Not, at least, you have to do something. Do you trust me? I asked. Her eyes widened further, her gasps became a bit more ragged. She didn't trust me, I knew.
She was only still with me because she thought I was official, hence inescapable, and she was important enough for the Roch to send someone after her.